Everyone, it is June 6th. Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee. We've got a work session on Senate Bill 1052. Judge Lipscomb, Senator Winters, take it away.
I will yield to Judge Lipscomb. You probably have before you the amendments, and I understand that you sent everyone out to fix the bill while I was not here last week at the doctor's office, and they came to a consensus. And there, as I understand, there's no disagreement. And with that, I will turn it to Judge Lipscomb to explain the agreement that was reached.
And sorry, our schedule didn't work with yours, Senator Winters. Judge Lipscomb.
Thank you, Senator Winters, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. We did reach an agreement in the hallway relatively quickly. All of us depended upon our highly tuned mediation skills. And what you have before you is the Dash 2 amendment, which is the new amendment as agreed. I was going to say Dash 2 amendment as agreed. And then Dash 3 amendment incorporates the earlier Dash 1 amendment with Dash 2. And I think Dash 3 is what would be my expectation that you'd want to move on today.
Yes. Okay.
And we did a wonderful job.
Thank you. I knew you would, since you are all highly trained in effective hallway mediation with a chair breathing down your backs. Questions for these two? Thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
We are in work session. The chair would move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1052. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none. So ordered. Chair would move the bill as amended with the Dash 3s to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Winters will be the carrier. All right. Okay. All right. We're going to move through some of the easy fixes, and then we'll move, for example, House Bill 2082 for the end. Let's move to a work session on 3485. This was on the floor this morning. It's my understanding that we did not pick up the correct amendment in committee, and we need to adopt the -B5 amendments. I'll let everybody take a look at those and breathe for a minute. And I'm not seeing anybody from the committee. Marjorie, do you know anything else? That's my understanding.
Madam Chair, that's exactly what you need to do.
Okay. And we know that for sure the Dash B5s are the accurate amendments.
They've been checked and double-checked.
My understanding is this is Senator Larry George's amendment.
It was an inadvertent error.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're in work session on House Bill 3485. The chair would move the -B5 amendments. Discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none. So ordered. The chair would move the bill as amended with the -B5s, hopefully correctly, to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Who takes this puppy? Okay. That's for a Deckard. Okay. We'll find out whoever. Okay. Next. Okay. All right. We're going to move to House Bill 3454. Public hearing. Open a public hearing in House Bill 3454. You must be Lisa.
Yes, I am.
Welcome. And I can't read your last name.
It's Udlin.
Udlin, okay.
Should I
get my sure, that'd be great.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I just tried this whole deal. Then.
They did. It's fast. We're
okay.
Just carrying it. We're good.
Senator Brown, committee members, my name is Lisa Udlin, and I'm an assistant attorney general at the Oregon Department of Justice. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 3454. The purpose of the bill is to clarify the definition of units sold found in ORS 323-810. Specifically, we want to clearly provide that roll-your-own tobacco, RYO, is included in that definition. By way of background, the states in 1998 entered into the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement. This agreement results in about $120 to $150 million of revenue to our state in every biennium. As part of the MSA, we agreed to adopt a model statute which requires NPMs, those are non-participating manufacturers, those who are not in the MSA, to put money into an escrow account to cover the costs of possible health-related claims. The amount of the payments are based on units sold in Oregon. Under the model statute, the definition of cigarette does include roll-your-own tobacco, and you can see that in ORS 323-804-B. The national, when the MSA model statute was drafted, it was drafted on a national basis. And unfortunately, unlike other states, Oregon does not affix a tax stamp to a roll-your-own. Therefore, roll-your-own is arguably not included in the definition of 323-810 as was originally intended. Again, our purpose today is simply to make the definition of units sold consistent with the definition of cigarettes in the Oregon statutes and in the MSA, as well as to make the definition consistent with the tax practice in Oregon of not actually stamping roll-your-own containers. I also just want to let you know this bill passed out of the House Revenue Committee unanimously and was on the consent agenda and passed in the House unanimously as well.
And so there's no other opposition to the bill, is there, Ms.
Not Hedlund? That I'm aware of, okay. Senator Roan.
All right. Any other questions? I think you're off the hook. Those are good bills to bring. All right. Anybody else wishing? It is your last opportunity to testify on House Bill 3454. Speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay. Close the public hearing. Open a work session. Chair would move House Bill 3454 to the House floor, to the Senate floor. My understanding is there's no amendments. Any discussion? You want me to call the roll? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none? So ordered. Senator Monica Sanderson, since you know so much about Roll Your Own, would you like to carry this bill?
That would be a different life, wouldn't it?
Yes. Did you want to carry it?
No.
Cruz? I didn't think so. All right. Moving along. What do we want to do next? Okay. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3321. Who would like to come up representing the proponents of the bill? Jessica Adamson, Lisa Trussell, come on up. And I have learned through the grapevine that you do need a minor technical amendment. Okay. We won't pull off fingernails today, but in a couple weeks we will be. So you're in luck today.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jessica Adamson with AGC, and thank you for sparing us the torture today. We are torturing ourselves. Thank you again for hearing this bill. This is an important bill to the association community that will allow us to continue with some additional sideboards to offer the same kinds of group health insurance programs we offer today. These are important programs that allow us to use our members to go to the market and create the kind of plans that they would not be able to purchase on their own. This bill is a compromise, helped to be conceived in the House with the assistance of the Speaker's Office and the Insurance Division. And this bill will set a sunset clause that will bring this issue back to be observed in 6 years, but also institutes reporting requirements on what's happening in the association market so that the Insurance Division can have some additional information about how our programs and our retention standards and claims experience interplay with that of the greater market, in addition to ensuring that we continue to have high retention standards in exchange for rating flexibility. The amendment that we require is a very simple amendment. The reason that we have this bill in the first place was as a result of a bulletin issued by the Insurance Division that covered association health plans, discretionary groups, and what are called MEWAs, multi-employer welfare arrangements. The bill covers associations, and it covers MEWAs. It doesn't include discretionary groups. We believed that they were included. We found out last night at 5:20 that they were not. Legislative Council is working furiously right now to try and complete that very easy technical amendment that will ensure that all groups are covered. So that is the extent of essentially what the bill does, and what the amendment will do is a bill with broad consensus and does good things for small businesses across the state.
Ms. Trussell, anything you wish to add?
No, I just want to say at least Trussell AOI, and we're supporting the bill, too.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks. Questions? All right, get it drafted. I shouldn't tell you to get it drafted, but as soon as you can have this drafted, we'll bring it back and take care of that. So,
thank you.
All right, anybody else? Last opportunity to testify on House Bill 3321. All right, we'll close that public hearing. We'll bring that back when we have an amendment. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2585. Ms. Taylor, why don't you tell us what we have? Jim Green, Lori Satinspiel, why don't you come on forward?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2585 comes to us from the Commerce Committee. Apparently, the Commerce Committee thought that they had a conflict amendment that they were needing with this bill. Therefore, they didn't approve the other two amendments that they were planning to adopt. They sent it to us, asking us to adopt the A4 and A5 amendments. The A4s allow community colleges to hire retired public employees in counties of less than 35,000 people, and the Dash A5s provides an exception to PERS employment limitations for speech pathologists and speech pathologist assistants.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I think Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association, your staff has done an exemplary job in defining it. I'm just here to answer any questions the community may have.
Lori?
Laura Satinspiel for the record, Chair. Same, our amendment speaks, and Marjorie did a great job of explaining it.
Okay.
I have a question on the amendment.
Sarah Montes Anderson.
Thank you. Can you give me a little bit of history as to why we need the Dash 5 amendments regarding speech pathologists?
Madam Chair and Senator Montes Anderson, there is a huge shortage right now with regard to speech pathologists and speech pathologist assistants in our state. We have a shortage of over 200 licensed speech pathologists in the state of Oregon right now. Those are individuals who provide services to students who are on individual education plans, receiving federal special education services in our school districts. We have just had this huge shortage due to retirements and a variety of other things, as well as the fact that when folks graduate from a speech path program, we're in competition with private industry who pays them in excess of $90,000 right out of college to go to work. We can't hire them at that level. And we are working right now with higher ed, and the Willamette ESD is working with Nova University to try to get a licensure program up. Because last year at the higher ed system here in Oregon, I think we produced, I think it was like 20 individuals with licenses out of the program. We increased capacity by 5, and they had over 75 applications that they didn't have spaces for. This is just an opportunity for us to try to build some sort of ability for school districts to hire these individuals.
And there will be those who are retired in the PERS system that would meet this definition, is what you're...
Madam Chair, Senator Montes Anderson, that is my understanding from individuals out in the field that are trying to recruit these speech pathologists. They're retired, but because they retired and they're in counties of greater than 35,000, they can't come back to work full-time, and we're just using it as a bridge. If you take a look, this has, on lines 19 and 20, this has an 8-year sunset. So it is truly a patchwork to try to get us to where we can get these folks back in.
And what counties follow up? What counties are 35 under?
Madam Chair, and
how many,
Senator,
I guess?
Anderson, I believe there are 13 in the state. Okay. Everybody on the east side except for, I believe, Umatilla, Deschutes, and then on the west side, I believe it is Tillamook and Curry counties.
Makes sense. Thank you.
All right. Sarah Hurst.
Madam Chair, just use this as an opportunity to pitch for a bill that's in Ways and Means currently, the speech pathologist bill that was a joint effort of the House and Senate Education Committees that will get us to the bridge you're talking about. Without that bill, I think even at the end of this sunset, we'd be woefully short. So it's a great program brought to us by Willamette ESD, and we're hoping that it moves.
Do you remember the bill number?
I right now, Madam Chair, I'm sorry I don't. It is
a
great bill.
I'll have it on my list, and I will get you that
okay.
number.
All right. All right, guys. Thank you very much. Appreciate you joining us. Anybody else wishing to testify on 2585? All right. We're going to close the public hearing, open a work session. Chair would move the Dash A4 amendments to House Bill 2585. Discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none. So ordered. Chair would move the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2585. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none, so ordered. Chair would move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Discussion. Any objection? Hearing seeing none, so ordered. Somebody want to take, you want to take this project on? Senator Cruz, this baby's yours. All right. Thank you very much. With that, we'll close the work session on 2585, which brings us to the moment you've all been waiting for. I believe it's House Bill 2082, unless I missed one. Okay. I don't think so. I think we got through them all. All right. With that, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 20. Oh, work session. Okay. All right. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2082. My understanding is there's a number of amendments. Mr. Day, do you is Mr. Day in the room? Let's see if he's outside. Who else has amendments that they would like to talk about? Nobody? Nobody? I guess. There he comes. I knew I have one victim.
Please tell me that we're here on 2082.
You are.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For your record, Ross Day with Oregonians in Action. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss the A14 amendments with you. And I appreciate the opportunity, hopefully, that how the committee consider the amendments. They do basically five things. The first, and there's a memo here that I drafted. Sorry, it doesn't have my name on it. I can fix that if you like. The first thing they do is the registration requirements that are currently in 2082, I think, violate the Buckley versus ACLF, which is a Supreme Court case, where the state of Colorado had six. There were six requirements that were challenged, three of which were thrown out by the U.S. Supreme Court that mainly dealt with registration of petition circulators, and they had to wear badges with their names on them, and so on and so forth. And in my legal opinion, those requirements in 2082 are pretty much identical to the requirements that were held invalid in Buckley. And so what the A14 amendments do, currently the way our law, the law works is if you're a chief petitioner, you're entitled to immunity from civil liability for the bad acts of your petition circulators if you notify the Secretary of State within one day of the bad acts occurring. What these amendments do is they say if you require your circulators to be registered, you're entitled to immunity from civil liability for those bad acts. I think that makes the registration requirements constitutional. Conversely, if you don't require, under these amendments, if you don't require your circulators to register, then you are it's almost a strict liability standard. So the immunity, if you will, that's in 265-61 is eliminated, and I think that gets you where, or at least where the drafters of 2082 wanted to go without running afoul of the First Amendment. So that's the first change that A14s do. The second change that they do is something I talked to the committee about before, and that is they don't eliminate the ballot title process. They do eliminate ballot title shopping altogether, completely eliminates. Under the A14s, if there's ballot title shopping, it would be tremendously expensive. Because the ballot title under the A14s wouldn't be drafted until after the measure qualifies for the ballot. Currently, what happens is you might submit several iterations of the same measure to get a good ballot title, because that's the ballot title that goes on not only the signature sheets but on the ballot as well. And as you've heard before, basically what people are doing is shopping for campaign slogans. In this case, under the A14s, that ballot title isn't drafted until after the measure actually qualifies, so there's no need for people to submit several iterations of the same measure. You submit one, you go out, you circulate it, you come back, and if you qualify the measure for the ballot, you get a you get a ballot title. The to substitute for the ballot title that goes on the signature sheets, the A14s require an initiative petition summary, 75-word summary drafted by the Attorney General that summarizes the measure. It doesn't affect at all the requirement that a copy of the proposed measure be attached to the signature sheets at all in any way, shape, or form. And that measure summary could be challenged in Marion County Court if there was a problem with it. What in my opinion, changing the ballot when you get the ballot title to after the measure qualifies is deemed to have qualified for the ballot, you eliminate ballot title shopping by having 1,000 signatures at the threshold that's currently in 2082. All you're doing is making it more expensive to ballot title shop. And if we really want to eliminate ballot title shopping, in my opinion, the way to do it is move when the ballot title is drafted, and so that the only ballot titles that you actually have drafted are those that are actually going to be on the ballot. And so what the changes to the ballot title, the other problem that I guess it's always been a practical problem for me. Right now, captions, which is the first, there's three parts to a ballot title, caption, result statements, and a summary. A caption is 15 words that is supposed to capture the subject of the measure. Well, that is a very difficult thing to do. And so in the A14s, it increases the caption word limit to 40 words. And then it has essentially an explanatory statement of 250 words. And then it summarizes the arguments in favor and arguments in opposition. The committee is supposed to summarize the arguments in favor and opposition to the particular measure. What you heard, I think, in your last meeting on this was testimony from Ms. Lowe, and she made a great point about the result statements and the reason why those were included in the ballot title was to help people understand what the effects of voting yes and what voting no are. And that's what I was trying to get at with the particular changes to the ballot title. And the total number of words that are used are 690 words, which is identical to the number of words under the current system. So we're not necessarily losing any information that would be available to the voter. We're just changing, I guess, the format. The next question is, the next change, I suppose, that it makes is how the ballot title is drafted. Right now we have an explanatory statement process. An explanatory statement is drafted after a measure qualifies for the ballot, but before the ballots and voter pamphlets are actually printed. And what the A14s do is they substitute the ballot title committee for the explanatory statement committee and just use that process. And that process is a five-member committee, two proponents, two opponents, and then they pick a fifth. And it's a great process. If you've never seen it work, it really is a fantastic process. And it just makes sense to use that for the ballot title, process, for drafting ballot titles. The other two changes that amendments make is one of my, it's a pet peeve, in 260-561, once you learn of, as a chief petitioner, of an alleged bad act, you have 24 hours to notify the Secretary of State of that bad act in order to be immune from civil liability. What happens oftentimes, however, is somebody will report, a petition circulator doing something bad. I'll get a letter from the Secretary of State, and under a literal interpretation of that particular immunity statute, I have to turn around and send a letter to the Secretary of State saying, hey, I just got a letter from you saying something bad may have happened. So just to get the immunity. And what the amendments do is they say, if you get a letter from the Secretary of State, you don't need to provide that 24-hour notice. And then the last change, but I don't think it's actually in the measure. I didn't see it. For some reason, in 2082, only treasurers are allowed to file statements of organization when you form a measure committee. When you submit a measure to begin circulating, you have to create a measure committee. And the statement of organization right now can be filed by the chief petitioner. For some reason, the changes in 2082 make it only the treasurer can submit that statement of organization. And these amendments, although I didn't see it in here, they were supposed to make it that the chief petitioner or the treasurer could file that statement. So that's those are the A14s in a nutshell, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Ross, can I go back to the first page of your memo, which I appreciate, given the short time frame we have to address this? And my understanding in terms of how we've done this, and my recollection is that we've sort of had this conversation in both committees in prior sessions, and I can't remember. Obviously, we didn't move forward on it, but I didn't remember this detail, but that the Secretary of State, once the petition is submitted, that the Attorney General would draft a petition summary, and I didn't know if there was any requirements put on that. What's the time frame? Is there an appeal process? That sort of thing.
There is an appeal process, and that's to the Marion County Circuit Court.
Okay.
And that's it. That's it. You don't go any further.
Okay.
So hopefully it relieves some of the burden that we hear about at the Supreme Court. So the only cases they'll be hearing are actual ballot title cases for ballot titles that will appear on the ballot. Section 9B on page 11 is where the summary language begins, and the Attorney General, it's supposed to mirror what the current ballot title timeline is.
Okay.
So 5 days, and then comments, five days for final, and then if there's a...
Okay. So the design is to get it relative. My concern is when folks are out gathering signatures, I think it's critically important for voters to have a pretty short summary of what the initiative does, because most people won't spend the time and energy, speaking, of course, only for myself, to read the measure. So
and you, can you can include me in that group as well.
All right. Other questions?
Mr. Crayon?
Mm-hmm.
Sam Monis Anderson?
Well, I was just wondering if the Attorney General's office or the Secretary of State's office has looked at these amendments.
Chair Brown, Senator Monis Anderson, they have them. They haven't had a chance to look at them because we just got them right before the committee hearing.
I think they're literally hot off the press.
Yes. Chair Brown, there was one other thing I wanted to mention. On page 14, line 13, it's the only mistake I've found so far, where it talks about statements that summarize arguments in favor and arguments in opposition. It's supposed to be 200 words each.
Okay.
That was page 14, line 11?
Line 13. The word each needs to be added to the end of the sentence.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Schrader, why don't you come on up? Mr. Schrader, your comments.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, Philip Schradl, special counsel to the Attorney General. I have had only a brief time to look at these. I was aware of them in a conceptual form yesterday. I do have a number of brief comments.
Great.
One is, this really is a fundamental sea change to the ballot title process. It would move the ballot title from the beginning of the process to the very end of the process. Over the past number of years in legislative sessions, when we've talked about ballot title process and the changes to it, a number of the participants in the process apparently put a lot of weight behind what the ballot title will be. Now, I think you need to be very conscious and aware of the fact that this would make the investment in time and resources in circulating petitions dependent upon not getting a ballot title until the very end of the process, until you've gathered the full 100,000 signatures to qualify it for the ballot. A number of other things about it. One, if you move to something on the format of the explanatory committee process that's currently in statute, you would move the ballot title drafting to not a kind of a professional organization like the Attorney General's Office or a Legislative Council or something, but a committee. And you might lose some legal expertise out of our office or out of Legislative Councils or some other repository of legal expertise. And many of these measures are very complex. So do be conscious and aware that if you're turning the ballot title drafting process over to people who have an investment in the outcome of the election, the proponents, opponents, I think you are a bit charging that environment, and you are losing also, I think, some professional legal expertise that would be brought to bear on the drafting of the ballot titles. That could be obviated to some extent by the fact that you will have competing interests at play, but it might lead you to a common denominator outcome as opposed to an accurate full statement of the implications of the measure. Another big area is the timelines here. As I understand it, under this proposal, the committee, ballot title committee, would be formed 120 days before the election, up through 109 days. Between 120 days and 109 days, the ballot title committee forms. 99 days before the election, the draft ballot title would issue out of the committee. That gives them 10 days. Then only 4 days before the hearing would be conducted before the Secretary of State. So the participants that are going to need to be aware of the draft ballot title will have to be knowledgeable about that process, jump in very quickly to get involved in that hearing process and submit any written comments they have on it. Only 5 days later would the revised ballot title be issued, 90 days. And then there'd be only a five-day period for people to file a Supreme Court challenge on that ballot title. That puts you about 85 days before the election. And I believe it's 60 days before the election that the voter's pamphlet needs to be processed and published by the Secretary of State. So that gives you a 25-day window for the Supreme Court to deal with it how it will. And for your own information, you know, in the background, the Oregon Supreme Court has determined historically under Flanagan v. Myers, a case it decided a few years ago, that it doesn't have the constitutional authority to do its own drafting of ballot titles. So there have to be in this process an opportunity for a modification by way of remand back to the ballot title committee. If the Supreme Court thought the ballot title committee drafted ballot title didn't satisfy the criteria, have to be a modification, have to go remanded back to the committee, back before the Supreme Court. Very truncated timelines to deal with that. And in fact, I'm unclear as to whether if there would be time for the modification process to take place. And then as well, the Marion County Circuit Court Review, the piece of the initiative petition summary has been lifted, I believe, out of the proposal that the Secretary of State's office and we submitted early in the process that had an initiative petition summary review. As Mr. Day said, it would be reviewed in Marion County Circuit Court under this proposal. I think the intent would be to have that be final, but I don't believe that the proposal right now has any language that would actually effectuate that. It simply calls for Marion County Circuit Court review and a judgment. I think that judgment right now would be subject to notice of appeal review by the Court of Appeals and on up to the Supreme Court. If the intent is to have that actually be final, I think that needs to be stated. And again, what you would have then would be, you know, a circuit court process at the initial petition summary stage, and that would be the initial petition summary would be what signatures would be gathered under, and then you would have a different process for getting a ballot title. Conceptually, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but the people involved in the process, I think, would need to have weigh in and give some feedback about whether they think the ballot title is the marketing tool that people have always professed it to be or not. That's why when we've come forward with proposals, we've always tried to do it in such a way that the ballot title would be done at some earlier point in the process so that people could actually invest the time and resources with the ballot title in hand.
But you would agree with Ross that this would substantially reduce the Supreme Court's involvement in these issues?
It would certainly have a number of fewer cases, Chair Brown. Right now it deals with about 65 of these cases. It would have about 10, but you can be definitely sure they'd be hotly contested and litigated. And the unfortunate circumstance is they'd be in a very compressed time frame before the court. And I know I've had conversations with some of the Supreme Court justices that they would be concerned about compressing all of that into the months of July and August.
When normally would be fishing.
Now, Senator Farioli,
I'm here to
since we won't be here, we can't complain about what they're doing. All right.
Chair Brown, to be honest, I think the answer is really because of the timelines of getting it done before September
4th. I think it's the issue with the voter's pamphlet. But yeah. Could you address Ross's comment about the circular registration requirement? Do you have any concerns about the Buckley case and whether this measure may...
You know, Chair Brown, you're actually going beyond my expertise, and there is another person or two here who have more expertise about those areas than me.
Okay.
And we did just get these before. On that front, I don't know that we've had a chance to look at the constitutional issues to find out if it's, you know, significant enough that we would, you know, support changes there.
And generally speaking, when we receive a measure that's got constitutional concerns, usually if there's a concern, legislative council does raise them, but I think this will officially put them on notice that we are curious what their opinion on this issue is. So, okay. Any other questions for this panel? I see Mr. Meek in the audience wants to come on up.
Do you need me?
I think you're off the hook at this point.
Great.
Thank you very much. Mr. Schradl, you're off the hook, too, as much as you will ever be off the hook. Dan, welcome, and thanks for your interest and comments.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, I'm Dan Meek. I occasionally represent groups that attempt to put measures on the ballot. I have never seen or heard about the A14 amendment until a few minutes ago, and I would certainly oppose the telescoping of the ballot title process into the explanatory committee process. My major concern is that the explanatory committee process is really under the 100% complete control of the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State appoints the fifth member to the explanatory committee if the parties can't agree. Mm-hmm. Now, most of the time in the past, the parties have agreed to the fifth member, but that's because the explanatory statement is a low-stakes matter at this point. Not a single word of the explanatory statement is on the ballot. It's in the voter's pamphlet only, and it's after the ballot title, and it's after the full text of the measure. Then you get the explanatory statement. It is often treated as a supplement to the ballot title and often doesn't even repeat what the ballot title says because that would be duplicative. But the process now is rather friendly and not contentious because, as I say, there's very, very little at stake. But if you put the ballot title process into the explanatory committee process, you will find a completely different world. I would expect very few sides would agree to a fifth member. The Secretary of State would end up appointing all of the fifth members, and there's no review of that process. So basically, it puts the Secretary of State in charge of the ballot title process. In addition, it makes those decisions essentially not effectively reviewable. As Mr. Schrader pointed out, you'd only have 25 days, and I calculate fewer than that, for the Supreme Court to handle all of the appeals. And if you have, let's say, 10 measures qualify, has been pretty typical in the last couple of cycles, you could have 10 cases before the Oregon Supreme Court and only 3 weeks to resolve them all the way through, which includes remands to the committee for the redrafting of any explanatory, of any ballot titles that the court finds to be insufficient or unclear. And remember, that 3 weeks is you've got to have briefing, you've got to have argument if the court's going to have argument, you've got to have remand, you've got to have the committee come back and redraft the ballot title. You've got to have that go to the court for approval. So it's just tremendously unworkable to squeeze that into the time period between the qualification of measures for the ballot, which is basically the first week of August, and the time that the voter's pamphlet has to be printed. And I don't know if Mr. Schrader was taking into account the overseas and the overseas version of the voter's pamphlet, which goes out even earlier. Some folks, including my clients in almost every case, have the resources to do a ballot title, I mean, to do a ballot measure rarely. It's basically for them a one-shot process, maybe once a decade. I would very much not like to see that process go into one which is essentially controlled by unreviewable appointees by the Secretary of State, and an extremely hasty, if not impossible, schedule for review before the Supreme Court. So I would oppose the A14 amendment.
Questions for Mr. Meek? All right, thank you. And we have your written testimony on the -A7s, the 12s, the 9s, And I think that's it. So thank you.
As far as the amendments go, yes, and thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to testify on any of the amendments at this point in time?
No, I just want to make a comment.
Go ahead.
Well, I certainly appreciate the effort that's and the thinking that's gone into trying to unsnarl the ballot title shopping issue. I think that is proving to be difficult for the institutions that have to deal with that issue and difficult also for the folks that are trying to use the initiative process. I am hoping that what will happen is that people will look at these amendments and that the chair will indulge additional opportunity for feedback to come to the committee, because I think there are some improvements in here to the process that would really help it. And anything I believe that we could do to streamline the process reinvigorates the process and perhaps helps reestablish some faith in the legislature by voters that we really look at the initiative process as an opportunity for citizens to directly govern. So I don't want to see anything that looks like a prior restraint on people's exercise of that franchise. And if we do have a constitutional issue here, I think we should thank the folks that have brought the question.
Thank you. Any other comments? All right. I assume we'll be hearing from folks. This is scheduled back for work session tomorrow. I'd like to give it some more time. So we'll probably bring it back early next week, Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. And hopefully we can put the ribbons on the package and get it out of here. It'll be your birthday present, Mr. Day.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else wishing to testify? Okay, with that, we're going to close the work session, and if there's no other business to come before the committee, we're adjourned. Thank you.
We'll check.